Hello, I'm Peter Donalds in for Kathleen Dunn, checking your religious literacy today. What do you know about, we'll get right to it. Stephen Prothero is author of Religious Literacy. Where is that? Subtitle, What Every American Needs to Know and Doesn't. He's been getting a lot of attention. Some surveys have shown, and his book accounts how Americans don't know much about religion. And yet we say in poll after poll, survey after survey, that we're very religious people. It's very important to us. Religion is certainly at the heart of political debates. It was just in our last hour that we were talking. So what should we know about religion? Why is this important? And what do we know? We're going to have a little fun, too, and take a quiz this hour. And you can try your hand at that as well as we talk with our guest. So, Stephen Prothero, welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thanks so much for having me.
You know what? I just watched The Ten Commandments the other night, as I do every year. It's one of my very favorite movies. I really enjoy it. What do you think of the Ten Commandments? Do you enjoy it? Is it part of the problem as you see it,
or part of the solution?
So.
I think movies about religion are probably a pretty good way to get some basic information out to people. Increasingly, we're moving towards visual culture and away from a word-based culture. So I think, that movie and other movies about religion do some good. I'm not sure that they're being that successful in teaching Americans what they need to know about Christianity or other religions, but
yeah,
they're probably part of the solution rather than part of the problem.
Okay. What happened here? Why is it that we, in one survey, will say, yes, religion is very important to us, I consider myself a religious person, and then in another survey, unable to answer some really basic questions?
Well, I think that knowing about your religion has gone to the periphery in terms of faith and piety, that it used to be back in the colonial period, in the early national period in the United States, that people who were Jewish really thought it was important to know basic Jewish stories and Jewish teachings, and people who were Christian thought it was really important to know basic Christian teachings and Christian stories. And increasingly now, belief or participation in a religion seems to be about experience and maybe about morality and maybe about politics, but not so much about knowing the distinctive teachings and stories of your own faith.
We'd like to hear your comments and questions at 800-486-8655. Questions to our guest, or if you want to try your hand at answering some of these questions, you can certainly do that too. 800-486-8655. Where do you lay blame, Stephen Prothero, for this state of affairs?
Well, you know, the classic argument is that religious literacy goes away in the early 60s. This is something you hear from people on the religious right, that it was the Supreme Court, motivated by secular humanism, that ruled in these two cases in 1962 and 1963 that we couldn't have devotional Bible reading and we couldn't have prayer in the public schools. And a couple things on that. One is that the Supreme Court made it really clear in both those rulings, in both those cases, that it was ruling against doing religion in the public schools, but it wasn't ruling against teaching about religion in the public schools. So I don't really think that's the source of it. The source for me really goes back to the mid-19th century, and it goes back not to secular people, but to religious people. And I talk in the book about these so-called Bible wars of the 1840s, 1850s, 1860s that happened in a lot of cities, and the battle was over whose Bible are we going to read. And the Catholics wanted the Catholic Bible to be read, and the Protestants wanted the King James Bible to be read. And they basically couldn't agree, and they finally agreed only at the end. Well, okay, fine, we'll just get rid of the Bible. If the Bible won't be taught our way, then it won't be taught at all. So really started much before the 60s.
And one more sort of general question before we get into the meat of this, or maybe I guess this is the meat. Why is this important? Is it maybe just culture or nature taking its course and becoming a little more secular? Why do we need to know the kinds of questions that are on our literacy quiz today?
Well, of course, there's the personal and the spiritual reasons. I think there's a lot of, most of the overwhelming majority of Americans consider themselves to be members of a particular faith community and 85% call themselves Christians and 96% believe in God. And I think you know, those who do have something of a dirty little secret where they know that they really don't know what they should know about their Catholic tradition, if they're Catholics, or their Jewish tradition, if they're Jewish. And this is something they'll admit, and many admitted to me when I went around and talked to friends and had conversations about religion as I was working on this religious literacy book. So I think there's that sense that people have individually that they don't know what they should know. They'd like to know more about their own faith. I think that's a piece of it. But the book really doesn't focus on that. The book really focuses on religious literacy as a civic problem. And I see two pieces to that civic problem. One is domestic and one is international. And on the domestic side, what we have, especially since 2004, but really over the last 25 years, is politicians increasingly talking about religion, making religious arguments, bringing religious reasons into the public square, quoting from the Bible, referring to particularly to Christian ideas and stories, as they make arguments about the environment, about abortion, about gay marriage, about stem cell research. And so in order to stay current and to stay participate in these debates, you need to know something about religion. You need to know something particularly about Christianity and the Bible. That's the domestic piece. And otherwise, we're just, you know, deferring basically to demagogues who get up and say, oh, the Bible says this about gay marriage, or the Bible says that about capital punishment. And we just have to say, oh, well, okay, I guess so.
In a more perfect world, if we took your advice and after a generation or so, we really understood, our religious literacy was really much better, would that, do you think, mean that politicians would use it less as a rhetorical weapon because we can't be manipulated so easily?
I'm not sure they'd use it less. That would hinge on one thing, which is whether it works or not. I mean, that's why Democrats are talking about religion so much, because they see that it works for the Republicans. So that would, it would depend on whether they thought it was still working. The thing for me that's important is that, you know, this is supposed to be a democracy, and democracies, you know, rest on informed citizens. If citizens aren't informed in their voting, then it becomes tricky to be confident that things are going to be moving forward. So I want, you know, this is a very basic idea. You know, knowledge is power. And I'd like to, for more Americans to be empowered through religious knowledge, to be able to call politicians to task, to be able to participate in the debate about, let's say, whether gay marriage is right or wrong when the religion question comes up. You know, I'd like for more people to be able to participate. That's the idea.
Describe your plan for public schools, for public high schools in particular.
Well, yeah. In order to do that, I need to say a little bit about the international side, because the international side of the problem, I think, is in a way more scandalous and more dangerous than this domestic side, which really has to do with democratic participation. But internationally, we need to know not really so much about Christianity and the Bible, but we need to know about Islam. And we need to know about religions that might prove to be the next hotspot. You know, a lot of foreign policy experts say that Kashmir is a place we need to worry about in terms of two countries that are facing off one another, India and Pakistan, one dominant Hindu majority, one a Muslim majority. You know, people in those countries are motivated by Hindu thought and by Islamic thought. And so in order to follow this stuff, in order to make smart decisions with American leaders, and in order for us as citizens to hold those leaders accountable, we need to know something about Islam and Hinduism and Buddhism and other religions. And right now we don't. The Bush administration, people in the Bush administration don't know enough about Islam. And they, you know, went blundering into Iraq without knowing what they were getting into religiously. They might have had some good advice about what was going to happen with oil or what was going to happen with certain political factions in the country, but I don't think they really had a clue about what was going to happen in terms of Islam. And increasingly, I think the American public is becoming aware that religion matters as a factor in international affairs. And if we want to make smart decisions that promote our national security as Americans, we need to have people in office and citizens voting for them who know something about these other religions. So that's the idea.
Okay.
Now, in terms of public schools, I think we need two courses. One attends more to the international, and one attends to the local and the national. I think we need a course on the Bible. We need a course on the Bible for high school kids so that they can follow Western music, so they can understand what's going on in American literature, so they can understand what George Bush means when he talks in his first inaugural address about the Jericho Road story. You know, my students at BU, when I give them my quiz, they don't know what that story is. They don't know what's the Good Samaritan story. They don't know that George Bush is trying to be a compassionate conservative by bringing up the Good Samaritan story. So we need a course in the Bible where students would read Genesis, where they'd read the Gospel of Matthew, not to become born-again Christians, not to become Jews, not to be told that the Bible is true or the Bible is, you know, the Word of God or anything like that, but just to say, here's this book. It's the most influential book in Western civilization, if not world civilization, and you're ignorant if you don't know something about it.
Would it be tricky for the curriculum designers and for the teacher to we really have to make this distinction between indoctrination and teaching? Will it take some special skills and some special training?
I think it takes training, yes, and I think it takes some sensitivity. You know, the Supreme Court, when it talks about this, one of the justices in one of these cases I was referring to earlier says that teaching about religion is a matter of intricacy and delicacy, that this is not a simple matter, that people need to be educated about the difference between preaching religion and teaching about religion in a non-devotional academic way. So teachers need to know about the First Amendment. They need to know about what's allowed and what's not allowed. And they have to have some sensitivity about trying to teach about religion in a way that isn't going to be, trying to get someone to stop believing or get someone to start believing in a certain thing.
In your research, have you found that religion, the prominence of religion comes up in other courses? For example, in government courses, and we're learning about how, you know, the Founding Fathers and the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and all of that, how religion plays a role in that, or maybe the music teacher, who certainly Christianity has a great deal of influence in early classical music, certainly art, the Sistine Chapel. Does religion come up regularly in other courses across the curriculum?
Well, if you talk to teachers about that, what they'll tell you is that, yeah, when I'm trying to teach The Old Man and the Sea by Hemingway, and I've got this guy who's, you know, up on a cross, essentially, and I try to explain this to students, sometimes they don't get it, you know, or somebody's talking in literature about the Damascus Road experience or the road to Damascus. People don't know, you know, hardly any of my students about one-fifth of my students at BU can pair Paul with the road to Damascus story when I try to get them to do that.
That's not Hope and Crosby.
No, exactly. So I think teachers have a huge problem if they're trying to teach, you know, Western music, and they're trying to say, oh, okay, this is about.
They don't want to have to take a few hours or day or two out of their curriculum and go back and explain the reference.
They have to backfill in order to do the reference, and then. But the more important issue isn't that it's hard to do, and that the students don't know anything about the Bible. It's that they feel worried that they're going to be violating the First Amendment, or that they're going to lose their jobs. Or, I mean, if you talk to teachers. Teachers think that the safest way here is just to avoid it. They just avoid religion because that way they won't get in trouble. And there's a perception that religion is this incredibly dangerous thing. There's a sort of taboo about talking about religion, like it's a bad word. And this is based on just a total misunderstanding of what the Supreme Court has said about teaching about religion in the public schools. And so, the court repeatedly has said this is okay. Not only is it okay, we give it a constitutional stamp of approval. They say you can't be an educated person without this sort of education about the Bible and the world's religion. So, yes, you can teach about religion in world history courses, in literature courses, but it's just not being done enough. And that's why I think we need these dedicated courses, one on the Bible and one on the world religions, for all high school kids.
Stephen Prothero is the chair of the religion department at Boston University and author of Religious Literacy, What Every American Needs to Know and Doesn't. You may recognize the name. He also authored American Jesus back in 2003, a very popular book that gained great attention. So he's our guest for the hour. Your calls right after this quick break, 800-486-8655. I'm Peter Donalds in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Peter Donalds in for Kathleen Dunn. We're talking with Stephen Prothero, author of Religious Literacy, What Every American Needs to Know and Doesn't. Let's go to our callers, starting with Bill in Madison. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi. Mr. Prothero, I also teach the history of the Middle East and therefore get involved in the history of religion. But I found that freshman students, for example, are less interested in teaching the concepts than the history of the concepts. For example, if I examine the Christian narrative about the resurrection, they're less interested. But when I start talking about Easter and the long history of that particular idea and how it manifests itself in Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, they become a great deal more excited. Has that been your experience?
Wow. What a great question. I don't know. I may have to tell you tomorrow. That's not going to work for this radio show, is it? You know, I think that, yes, I think that, I'm a historian of religion, so this is the way that I like to think about things, is how they follow through. But I do find that, I'm not sure it is my experience. You know, I'm teaching a course right now that's called Death and Immortality. It's basically about how different world religions deal with the problem of death and the question of the afterlife. And so I actually talk about both those things. I talk about, you know, and I go in both directions. And I find that some students are really interested in just, say, the idea that you can be raised from the dead, and what does that mean, and what will your body be like in heaven or in paradise? Will you look 33 or will you look 70? And if you had a limp in your, you know, normal life, will you have your limp gone in heaven? And they're really interested in that. And then I find other students are really interested in the historical progression, like you say, of the idea of the practice of Easter and where it came from and how it's connected to certain, you know, spring festivals, etc. So I'm not sure. I guess I'm agnostic about how all this stuff should be taught, if it should be taught more philosophically or more historically. I just would like people to know what the idea of the resurrection is, and frankly, for them to know what Easter is. There's a lot of Christians in America who can't even tell you, when asked on polling, you know, what does Easter celebrate? And they can't say, oh, well, Easter is when Christians celebrate, you know, the idea that Jesus was raised from the dead. So, however it happens, I guess I don't care. I just like to see it happen one way or the other.
Bill, thanks for your call. But what about in that conversation of Easter, when it comes up in the class discussion, that maybe one student stands up and says, well, the Christians just superimposed their Jesus holiday on top of the pagan holiday, which preexisted by thousands of years, and all of a sudden you got a fight in class?
Well, see, I just think you overestimate. I think that there's a huge overestimation of the fight. I think that that, frankly, is an artifact of the whole culture wars mentality of the way we talk about religion in the United States. And, you know, so many times if religion comes up on TV, there's this sort of crazy person on the religious right up there, and there's some crazy atheist up there, and they're going at each other as if this is the way Americans talk about religion. But it actually isn't the way most Americans talk about religion. Most Americans are, you know, amazingly tolerant, amazingly reasonable when it comes about their own faith and those of others. That's one of the amazing things about the United States that differentiates it from, you know, medieval France or even contemporary France. And so, you know, there's already a lot of courses on the world's religions and the Bible in public schools. There's not enough, but about one out of every 12 U.S. public school districts right now has a course on the Bible. These are not places that are erupting, you know, in medieval-style religious warfare. These are places where people are making reasonable decisions about how to get this done. Now, yes, when a student stands up and says, well, was Jesus really raised from the dead? Or when a student stands up and says, oh, my grandfather says that was just some pagan holiday and the Christians took it over. Well, that's a moment of that, you know, what the Supreme Court has called intricacy and delicacy. And, you know, teachers have to figure out ways to deal with that. But they're already figuring out ways to deal with that when it comes up in a science class, when you're talking about evolution, right? And students are going to stand up and say, I read the Gospels, or no, sorry, I read Genesis, you know, and Genesis says this all happened in 7 days, you know? And the teacher's got to figure out a way to say, well, okay, that's what, you know, certain Christians believe. Some Christians believe about that, evangelical and fundamentalists, and some Orthodox Jews, but right here we're talking about science, and science is a different sort of project from the religious project, and of course...
But science is just another religion, the kid retorts.
Then you say, well, okay, I mean, yeah. If you're a sophisticated person, you can say, well, there are certain similarities between religion and science, but actually science proceeds on different basis than most religions proceed. And yeah. You could even have an interesting conversation about the differences between religion and science.
This is why I'm not a teacher. Jake is calling from, hold on a second. I need to, I got the right buttons pushed. Jake in Menasha. Hi, Jake.
Hi. I just wanted to comment your author, the author of this book, about how right on he is with regards to how ignorant people are about the world's religions. I was raised Catholic and studied to be a priest, and until I got to college and studied comparative religions and world philosophies, my eyes were really opened as to how things are in terms of the world. For example, why the Sunnis and Shiites hate each other and what had gone on regards to those two religions, for example. And I will go out and get this book immediately. And thank you for writing the book.
Hey, Jake, before I let you go, you want to take one of the quiz questions here?
Sure.
What is Ramadan, and in what religion is it celebrated?
Ramadan is...
This is kind of a hard one. Only about a third of my incoming students get this one correct.
I want to say it's a Jewish holiday, but it's not. I believe it's an Islamic holiday.
Right.
Good. That's right.
Right.
And but I'm trying to think why it is celebrated.
Yeah.
It's some war, I believe.
Okay. What is the nature of the celebration?
Yeah. It's not a war. It's one of the five pillars of Islam, which is one of the, you know, five most important practices in the Islamic tradition, and it's a fasting. It's a period of fasting that happens
yes.
in the Islamic tradition.
We just finished that up, didn't we? Or are we in it now?
No, it was a bit ago, but okay. It's interesting because in Ramadan there's been some interesting. Part of what I try to do in the dictionary is I talk about ways in which these various traditions and beliefs show up in American popular culture. And one way that the Ramadan story, the Ramadan practice has shown up is with some NBA players who are Muslims who are observing Ramadan, and they will, you know, fast during the day. And this has created, some challenges for them as basketball players. And it brought back the story, for me at least, about Sandy Koufax when he refused, as a Jew, to pitch in the World Series on Yom Kippur.
Yeah. Jake, thanks for your call. And, yeah, I didn't mention the last third of your book is this dictionary of religious literacy. It's really very useful and very handy. And then you also have, as an appendix, the religious literacy quiz that I've got in my hand today, and we're going to maybe ask a few more questions. The Ramadan question, how many people get that one right? Do you have figures on that?
I don't know of any big polling place that did that, but I have given that question to my students the last few years at Boston University. I give my quiz to incoming students taking an intro to religion course,
uh-huh.
and they I think it was about a third, a little more than a third, are able to say
okay.
that it's Islamic and that it's a fasting holiday.
Yeah, well, Jake, you're in good company then. He did, and Jake got the right religion. Let's go to more callers. Let's see, Dave in Menominee. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I was born and raised Catholic, went to Catholic school, and my two kids are in the same Catholic school that I went to. But I completely disagree with your guest. I think it's wrong to bring religion into the public schools. First of all, they can't afford to run as it is. They're constantly cutting music and art. Things that this guy says, you know, they can't understand unless they know religion, and we basically have to replace it with religion. What we need is parents, because this is a parent's responsibility. This is the parent's responsibility, not public school's responsibility. If the parents
it's
want
the parents
their children...
It's the parents' responsibility to teach kids about Islam, about Islam in Iraq and Iran. That's what parents should be doing.
But
right.
if a parent wants their child to learn about it, then they will learn about it. To have to force them to take classes in school is just absolutely, I won't use the word. It's
so
just
Dave,
offensive.
Dave, you're not convinced by the argument that if for our civic life, to be informed voters, that some of this information would be important? You're not convinced by that argument?
I'll tell you. Here we go again. Parents need to... parent their children.
Okay.
This is a parent's responsibility.
Well, all right, Dave, thanks a lot for your call.
Dave, I totally agree that it's a parent's responsibility to raise their children as Catholics or as Jews or as atheists. I totally agree with that. So if that's what this is about, I'm absolutely in agreement. But it is not the parents. I mean, it would be great if parents, you know, not all parents, you know, homeschool their kids. But it's not the parents' responsibility, at least in America, to teach kids math. It's not their responsibility to teach them how to read and to write. And it's not their responsibility to teach them about world history. I mean, right now we put that responsibility on our public schools. And if we want to have another generation of leaders who are ignorant about what's going on in the world, where religion is the most important motivator for action, whether it's good or bad, whether it's political or cultural, religion is what moves people, whether we like it or not.
Dave, you had something else to say?
Absolutely. Here we go. Now, if you want your child to learn about those things, you send them to a school that specifically teaches them, like Jerry Falwell's place. There's 150 people.
But Dave, you're missing this distinction that I'm making that I think is fairly obvious if you just attend to it, between teaching someone to be religious and teaching someone about religion. I mean, there's a difference between if you want your kid to learn to be an artist, you could send them to an art school, but if you want them to learn to be an art historian who knows something about the history of art, that's a totally different thing. It's the same with religion. Religious history is different from being religious. You can be an atheist. In fact, you know, I was on a radio program very recently, and Professor Daniel Dennett from Tufts University is one of the most outspoken atheists in the country. He thinks religion is a crock. He's very much in favor of teaching about religion in the public schools because he recognizes, as someone who's, you know, thinks about religion a lot, that religion is a huge, important factor in world history. It's something that motivates people. It's something that drove jets into buildings in New York City. Religion did that. We can't afford to be ignorant about what religion does. And you're asking for children to be ignorant, and I'm not willing to do that. Private schools teach kids about religion. Private schools teach kids about Islam and Hinduism and the Bible. Why should public school kids who can't afford to go to private schools be left behind about this really important issue?
Dave, appreciate your call very much. Thank you. Hank is in La Crosse. Hi, Hank.
First of all, I'd like to question some statistics that you gave at the very opening of the show. You said that there were 4% of the population that was atheist. All of the polls that I have seen over the last several years have indicated numbers closer to 14% of the population is atheist.
That's not true. 14% figure is people who say they have...
Also, I would like to point out that there was a recent poll done by, I forget which national organization, that conducted the poll in a way so that the respondents were anonymous, and the statistic there was that 42% of the population has at least some doubts about the existence of God. 42% have at least some doubts.
Hank, let me get some response, and I'll come back to you for again.
Yeah, well, I'm not particularly invested in how many atheists are in America, so it doesn't matter to me, but I will respond to the 14% because it's a fundamental confusion. If you ask people, Americans, do they believe in God, it's about 96% who say yes. If you ask them, what is your religious affiliation, 14%, which is the figure that I just heard from this gentleman, 14% will say none. There's a difference between not having a religious affiliation and not believing in God. The overwhelming majority of nuns, as they call them, N-O-N-E-S, not N-U-N-S, the nuns, the people who respond on polls, I have no religious affiliation. The overwhelming majority of those people believe in God, and they also, intriguingly enough, the overwhelming majority of them consider themselves to be Christians. So it's an issue of whether you're affiliated with a tradition rather than whether you believe in God. And that figure has been rising, the figure of percentages of people who aren't affiliated with a religious tradition.
And Hank, beyond that argument, you had a comment or question?
Well, I still question his interpretation of that.
That's okay.
However, I would be profoundly concerned about what I would refer to as quality control in the teaching of these classes. I can easily imagine enormous pressures being applied in many school districts that are not very diverse, that the way that courses would be taught would be just those that particular population wants to have taught. I agree with you that the teaching of religion as a general topic is a desirable thing, but the nuts and bolts of it scare the heck out of me.
Well, I agree with you. I think that these courses should not be taught if we don't have trained people who are trained to teach them. I agree with you. I mean, the Time magazine did a cover story that was based in part on my book recently, and it was an argument for teaching about the Bible in the public schools, and on the cover it said, you know, we need to teach about the Bible, but we need to do it very, very carefully. And I agree, particularly in very homogenous districts where there's not going to be a lot of pressure from, you know, minorities, religious minorities, for fairness in these courses, there are going to be some people who are going to try to hijack them and turn them into courses for, you know, converting kids to evangelical Christianity. I actually have no doubt that that will occur. But I do have faith that in our judicial system, that if when that happens, and I don't think it'll happen all that often, but I do think it will happen in a small minority of cases, that we'll have lawsuits and we'll have judges step in. I mean, this already happens now. Just a few months ago, there was a lawsuit that was brought against a school district who had somebody teaching a science course where he was trying to convert kids to Christianity and accept Jesus as their Savior and Lord when they got to the, you know, portion where they were talking about evolution. That's unconstitutional, and I don't want to see unconstitutional courses being taught. So there is some risk here, but I think that what will happen is what's happened in the past with schools, is that we'll have lawsuits and we'll fix things.
Hank, you want to answer one of the quiz questions?
Yes.
Okay. What is the golden rule?
Golden rule is to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's part of every major religion in the world.
Very, very good. The reason that wasn't – at first you think that's an easy one, but it often gets confused with the neighbor as thyself.
Yeah, love your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah.
It's a more specific idea.
Yeah.
But Hank's right that you can find the golden rule in just about every religion and culture in the world.
I'll give you one more, Hank.
Okay.
Can you name a sacred text of Hinduism? There are several.
I can't, because whenever I've come upon the words, I couldn't pronounce them. I've read the words, but the enunciation of those is beyond me.
You know what? I have the exact same problem, and I'll prove it right now. Bhagavad Gita?
Yeah, the Bhagavad Gita, or the Mahabharata, or the Upanishads, or there's a whole bunch of Hindu scriptures out there.
Yeah.
The Vedas are the oldest.
That's right. I this is all ringing a bell now. I took a comparative religions class in college and had the classic Houston Smith World Religions. You know, he's still writing.
Yeah, he's a very popular writer. He presents. I actually like that book. It's called The World's Religions,
yeah.
Or it used to be called The Religions of Man, and it presents a really quick and easy way to understand some of the major religions, although he does have this tendency, which I think is unfortunate, to try to argue that all the religions are the same, and I just don't think that that's true. I think religions are quite different in their aims and their goals and their beliefs and their practices.
You know, that opens up I'm going to take a quick break, and you've made me think of something I want to ask you for that. Quick break, right back with our guest, Stephen Prothera, author of Religious Literacy. I'm Peter Donaldson for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network. You know, Stephen Prothero, you raised a very provocative point here when your criticism of Houston Smith's classic The World's Religions, that maybe he tried too hard to make them all equal. Are you saying that the way religion should be taught is that, well, there's an old joke, you know, right back after this, well, The World's Religions, which one is right? You know? Are there some value judgments to be made on how one falls short, or maybe one has a better idea of things? And that's pretty tricky too, isn't it?
Well, sure, that's tricky. It's not unknown to public schools, because we have the same problem when we're talking about political philosophy, right? Or ordinary philosophy, or even art. You know, which is the better kind of art? Which is the better, you know, party? That is it, the Democrats or the Republicans? This is the broader question: is to what extent teaching in the public school should be descriptive, and to what extent it should go to norms and value judgments. And obviously, when it gets to religion, you have to be even more vigilant than you are in those other arenas, because it would be unconstitutional for teachers to be telling students that Christianity is right, or atheism is right, or religion is stupid, or religion is wonderful. It's pretty clear from the Supreme Court you can't do any of those things. But that said, you know, part of what's interesting about religion is to try to figure out who's right. And so I think you have to you have to allow students to entertain those questions, and those questions can come up in the classroom, but they have to come up in terms of, you know, well, what is it that Christians say about this, or what is it that Hindus say about that?
You know, I'll bet this would work really great with teachers and students if we could just eliminate the parents. I'll bet it would work great then.
Well, you know, and even when you include the parents, it doesn't work so badly in the places that make this happen. This is one of my points. I think that the fears about this are actually much more than the challenges. You know, people tend to just have this visceral concern that, ooh, you know, we can't do this because it's unconstitutional, and they, you know, they haven't read what the Supreme Court justices have said, or, oh, everybody's going to be at each other's throats.
Yeah.
That's not my sense. And I think that part of this hangs on to what extent, you know, Americans are really engaged in these culture wars, and to what extent the culture wars are just an artifact of television and the media. And I think they're an artifact of television and the media. And I think the vast majority of Americans are in the reasonable middle when it comes to religion. And this is why, you know, there has been some polling on would you like your school to have, you know, courses in the study of religion? And the vast majority of Americans say yes. They're not opposed to this.
Karen's calling from Appleton. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I guess I'm just not as optimistic as you. I mean, I think that it's a great idea, but you just listen to the callers. You can't, you know, it's the parents' job to teach about religion. You know, it's very difficult. I mean, I am a religious studies professor also, and I have a very hard time just explaining to people when I'm sitting on a plane what I do.
Right.
You know. Because I'm glad you're spreading the gospel. Well, no, not exactly. Oh, you're one of those people. Well, no, not exactly. You know, there's only two responses, and I think I have children in the public school. I don't see it. I don't see it that it's possible. I don't think the teachers, I don't think our society can handle it. I'm not sure why that is, but I think although it would be great, I don't see that.
We've heard Stephen Prothero, that, you know, kind of an optimism versus pessimism divide here, but maybe be specific. What would it take to get us there, to get us to...
Well, I'll tell you one thing I'm learning from doing, you know, radio and television shows about this book is that one thing that needs to be said over and over again is there is another way to talk about religion besides the way that you talked about it when you grew up in Sunday school. I think that's a message that needs to go out. And frankly, I think that's where we religious studies professors, since we have, you know, a colleague of mine on the line, have done a really poor job just educating the public about what it is that we do and what the academic study of religion is.
I mean, we have trouble within our own institutions, you know, much less.
Sure, I know, explaining what we do to our presidents and our provosts and things.
Right. So, I mean, I feel like, you know, I admire you for your optimism, but I see it as, you know, such a difficult, we would have to go to the teachers' colleges, it would have to be a whole societal shift, and I'm just not sure how we'll do it.
I've got two religious studies professors on the line here. I'm going to take advantage of it and voice my concern that I alluded to earlier. But again, for example, the Council of Nicaea and, you know, deciding what's going to be in the Bible and what's not going to be in the Bible and how to interpret it, this is seen as blasphemous to some people who say the Bible is the Word of God directly. How do you teach something like that without seriously offending several people in your classroom?
Realize that it's already being done. Even at this very second in America, around America, there are kids sitting in Bible as literature courses in high schools all across the country. As I say, not enough, but, you know, 1 out of 12. And they're doing this. This is not like I'm making some proposal here to invent some wacky thing. I mean, this is something that's happening all over the country. It just needs to happen more. And yes, there would be kids in the class who will say, the Bible is the Word of God. And there'll be kids in the class who will say, you know, the Bible is, you know, fables written by idiots. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that's great about a classroom.
Karen, how do you handle that with your students?
Oh, I put it right on the syllabus. I say, this is what we are doing and this is what we're not doing. We are not evaluating whether or not any particular religion is true or more true, or, you know, we are... You know, I lay it out right on the syllabus what we are doing and what we are not doing, and that's what we do on the first day, and sometimes we have to come back to it on other days, you know, in the semester. But it, you know, on the college level, it can be done, but these children are not living with their parents, and, I mean, these students are not living with their parents like elementary and high school students are, and I just think that it's a little different.
Probably big difference between college and high school. Karen, you want to take one of the questions here?
Okay.
Oh, let's see. You want to choose one for her, Stephen? Have you got the questions in front of you?
Give her a hard one.
Okay, I'll give her a hard one.
Give her the George Bush one. Oh, I already said that, though, on the show.
I didn't hear it.
President George W. Bush spoke in his first inaugural address of the Jericho Road. What Bible story was he invoking?
The Jericho Road. Yeah, I don't do the Bible. You stumped me.
We got you on that one.
That's also a hard one, though. Yeah. And, you know, only 3% of my students get this.
Really?
It's a little bit of a trick question because the Jericho Road is where the Good Samaritan story takes place. And so just have to know that, you know, in the Bible story, I mean, if you said something about there was a guy going down a road and a bunch of people passed by and nobody helped and somebody walked over and helped him, what's the name of the guy? I think a lot more people would get that. But it's interesting, when George Bush used that in his inaugural address, he talked about it in that fairly ambiguous, elliptical way, where he just said, when we are going down the Jericho Road, we will not walk by the people on the other side who are in need. We will cross over. And it was his way to try to pitch the Republican Party as a party of compassionate conservatism.
I'll give you one more. Can you name any of the five books of the Hebrew Bible or the Christian Old Testament?
Sure. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Okay. Good. Karen,
well, thanks
a lot.
And appreciate the chance to talk to you.
And your prize will be coming in the mail. You know what I answered on that one? Because I went through this quiz, and I had Joshua, Judges, and Ruth. What is that? What was my mistake?
Well, you were listening to Lyle Lovett.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the name of one of his albums.
I
was talking to a friend of mine about that recently, and she said, I was listening to that album over and over again, and I finally realized those are three books in the Bible.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
But my answer was wrong, though. They aren't from the Old Testament.
No. No, they are. No, they are from the Old Testament, but they're not from the first five books of the Hebrew Bible.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, those are Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy.
Those are the
so-called five books of Moses.
These are the later ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason I could answer some of that, is even though it was incorrectly, because I have the Lyle Lovett CD. Karen, thanks for your call.
That's right.
Scott's in Green Bay. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. I think it's a good idea. I think... especially if it's taught from a historical standpoint. I'll just take, you know, Western Christianity more than anything else. There are some great, great theologians that have done extensive work on the historical figure of Jesus, which, if you see it in most contexts, he's almost treated in a mythical sense more than anything else. And I think it would be great for students to learn all world religions. My kid, it's kind of interesting. I've got two kids in high school right now, and they look at some of their history and literature, and they talk about Hinduism, the caste system. They talk about Buddhism. They talk about Islam.
Scott, you know what? Our phone line isn't too good, but we've got the gist of it. Well, we've got a fan of the idea.
I was hoping to ask Scott if he was worried about his kids learning about Hinduism or Buddhism, if that made him worried.
Are you still there? Are you worried about that at all?
No, I'm not worried about it at all. I encourage it. And my only concern is, and I've seen this, and I'm not trying to be, I can't think of the word, but anytime you mention the word Jesus, people seem to freak out.
Your phone is definitely leaving us now, but I've got the author of American Jesus here with us. Why don't you comment on that, Stephen Prothero?
Well, I'm just laughing about people freaking out when they hear Jesus. I mean, Americans love Jesus. You don't have to, you know, be a Christian to love Jesus. But I do agree that talking about Jesus in a public school setting is tricky. And I'm not sure the best thing to do in public schools is to go into that whole historical Jesus debate. I don't think that's what I do. I'm looking for something much more basic. I would like students to read Genesis and read the Gospel of Matthew. I'd like just ordinary Americans who are too old to be back in public school to read those two books. And that's something you can do in an afternoon. And if you read Genesis and the Gospel of Matthew, you get about 90% of the references that are made in American literature and in American politics to the Bible. It's a pretty quick and easy way to get at this stuff. You don't have to, you know, go through all the begats and the genealogies of the wars and chronicles and things like that. I mean, you can get a lot of information from just doing those two books.
Yeah. You know, my family and my son especially are fans of The Simpsons, and that's one cultural icon which uses religious references
all the time. Yeah.
So,
there's a wonderful one of my favorite episodes I used to show to my kids in an American Buddhism class I taught was when Lisa is trying to teach Bart to putt so that he can win the contest, and she teaches him this wonderfully strange combination of Taoism and Buddhism, and I'd ask my students, now which piece of this is Buddhism and which piece is Taoism, and it ends up in a tie. It's very funny, and Lisa tries to talk about how auspicious the tie is, because in Japanese culture a tie is a wonderful thing, but Bart isn't really having anything of that. So yeah, to understand even, you know, movies like, you know, I don't know, Quentin Tarantino, you know, films, Pulp Fiction, you know, that's centered in some ways around a biblical quotation. Huh. There's a lot of references to, well, Babel, you know, what does that mean?
Yeah,
you know,
that's
the name
right.
of the movie.
Sure.
You know, that's
sure.
a Bible story.
And much more blatant attempts like Monty Python's Life of Brian, which is
right.
which
and
is
I
hysterically
was actually,
funny.
I was looking recently at Oprah Winfrey's book club selections, and you look at those selections, East of Eden, Song of Solomon, Rapture of Canaan, the Book of Ruth. These are titles in her, you know, in her novel picks, and all those titles, just to understand them, you need to know something about the Bible.
Do you find working with students that they'll recognize, that it'll kind of ring a bell, some of these stories or ideas, and they'll say something like, oh yeah, I saw that in The Simpsons, or I saw that in a movie? They kind of know the spoof version of it?
Well, I think that's right. Often the first encounter is with the spoof version,
yeah,
rather than with the real version. It's almost like, people talk about how they get their news from the Jon Stewart show.
Right.
It's a little bit like that. You know, you get your Bible information through the spoofs on The Simpsons.
Okay, let's reflect on that for a moment. Man. Scott, thanks a lot for your call. Boyd is in Milwaukee. Hi, Boyd.
Hi, Peter. Great show, and hello to your guest. I guess I want to say, me being an atheist, I do think that the approach that the gentleman is using is actually a good approach, because, you know, I still read a lot of different books on theology. I confess my knowledge of Hinduism is pretty much next to nil. So if you're going to ask me a question, you can just throw Hinduism out.
Oh, okay, I'll give you a break on that one.
Okay, but I think what a lot of other callers said, though, I think it might take a while, if you get the ball rolling with this, to find a right approach. A really good book that I read years ago, and your guests might be familiar with it, it came out about 10 years ago, called Because the Bible Tells Me So, Uses and Abuses of Scripture. And it was really a reference guide, but it had everything in there from, oh my goodness, well, they had a quote in the Bible that would say, this is what the Afrocentrism movement uses to justify that Jesus was actually
right.
black. And they have a quote, but then they also had a quote in there, well, this quote just is white supremacy, and a lot of different issues. And the thing is, I guess if you're going to teach it as history, it would be, I think it'd be good, but it'd be kind of complicated, because I have problems with just how American history is taught in this country. I mean, there's so much we still don't know about the Civil War, and it seems all we're being taught is names and dates. And I don't know, do you think, though, it's going to take a while for if public schools do this, that an approach will be, what would be the right approach? Or
Boyd, stick around. I'll ask you a question after our guest response.
I know the question we need to ask Boyd.
Okay.
Because it's the kind of thing that might have been in that book. But, yeah, I think we need to figure out the best practices here, the best approach. And I think it should definitely include, you know, for me, it's part of it is the Bible as literature, reading the Bible as literature, but also understanding its uses out in American literature and world literature. But I think particularly for me, because my emphasis here is on citizenship and the political side here, I think it's important to know the Bible references that are used in American political speeches. You know, the I Have a Dream speech by Martin Luther King would be a very interesting exercise to go through that and try to figure out what the biblical references are. Or the House Divided speech of Abraham Lincoln that is really based on one particular passage in the Gospel of Luke, I think that's important. But I don't want to be simply talking here about, I'm talking a lot about the Bible. I think that the balanced way to do this is to have a Bible course and also a world religions course. And I think that students really need to get both the sense of the Bible and Christianity, but also a sense of the world's religions.
Just a minute left of the program. You want to ask Boyd his question?
In 30 seconds.
Who
help themselves.
Okay.
I ask on the quiz in the book, is this a quote from the Bible? And if so, where? God helps those who help themselves.
Ooh, that's oh my goodness. Ouch.
Come on, Boyd, you can do it.
I have to say, I'm just going to throw some out. I'd say I do not think that is a Bible quote. I'm just taking a wild guess.
Well, that's a good wild guess, and it was Ben Franklin. But the thing that's interesting about this is it's not from the Bible, but it seems to me entirely unbiblical. I mean, the biblical notion, I think, is God helps those who can't help themselves. And this is Ben Franklin's more sort of capitalist idea that you need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And a lot of even evangelicals don't know that that's not in the Bible.
Boyd, thanks a lot. Well, you know, Rush Limbaugh credits the Bible with inventing capitalism. And I heard his whole thing on it. You know what? The time is up. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
All right, take care. Stephen Prothero, the book Religious Literacy, What Every American Needs to Know and Doesn't. Thanks to Mimi Notstein for on-air production and Carmen Jackson, who produced the program.